Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 806th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Welcome, welcome. Today I have Joel Salatin and John Moody to talk about the Rogue Food Conference. Joel Salatin and his family own Polyface Farm in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley. Featured in the iconic foodie book Omnivore's Dilemma and award-winning film Food Inc., the farm's moniker is Healing the Land, One Bite at a Time. Joel is a prolific author and speaker. He promotes local food systems, freedom of food choice, and farming systems that build the commons. Joel was a guest on our podcast and appeared in episode 310. John Moody lives in his homestead in the rolling hills of Kentucky. He founded the Whole Life Buying Club, one of the largest alternative food distribution approaches in the country. He is the author of 5 books and a well-known speaker at conferences across the country on health, food, farming, and freedom. John is a returning podcast guest and appeared on episode 116 and 535. Together, they created the Rogue Food Conference that they give every year. Welcome to the show today, Joel and John. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Yep, it's great to be back.
Awesome. All right. So the Rogue Food Conference, what is it?
The Rogue Food Conference, John, I'll start here. You chime in whenever you want to. But the Rogue Food Conference was conceived in my mind a long time ago. One of my books is, the title is Everything I Want to Do is Illegal. And when I do a lot of media interviews and things like that, and what's the weak link? What's the hurdle of local food, authentic food, credible food, nutrient dense food? You can say whatever you want to. What's the hurdle? What's the single biggest thing holding it back? The single biggest thing holding it back is government regulations that favor large industrial complexes and nutrient deficient food as opposed to neighbor to neighbor commerce. And as this kind of overburdensome regulatory climate increased over the years, we had our run-ins, our tangles with the bureaucrats over and over again. We were threatened to be shut down and different things. We had our battles. And fortunately, I had some background in debate and drama and speech, and I didn't just go quietly into the night like so many. I fought back, and I was politically savvy, so I'd get our senators and our congressmen involved and our delegates and things, and we fought back and we won some things. And as I go around the country, I would talk about what we do, and the first question was always, well, how do you do that? It's illegal here. You know, we can't do that here. And there was just this total, this attitude of disempowerment among people that wanted to serve their neighbors with good food, but they just felt disempowered. And so I said, what we need, there are creative, innovative, courageous people around this country who have figured out ways around this heavy-handed, burdensome regulatory environment. Let's showcase them. And about that time, of course, I met John Moody early on. He was involved with Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund in its early days, and which was a helper in this space for people. And John and I were just brainstorming one day. I said, we need to put on a conference and showcase the people who have beat the system. And he was in a place in his life where he said, you know, that works for me. And I said, well, if you'll handle the back of the curtain, I'll use my megaphone to get the word out. And we did the first one in, what was it, John, the spring of 2020?
It was January. It was January. 7 days or so before the first lockdown.
Yeah, it was in Cincinnati, and I'll let John jump in here, but here's what I remember about that day. I was emceeing it, and when we finished the day, there was laughter, there were tears. It was one of the most emotionally charged times. You had 300 people in a room just virtually drinking out of a freedom fire hose.
Wow.
And at the end of the day, we're done. We've gone from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, which is a long day. And I get up and I say, thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. And we appreciate you coming. We're done. I walk off the stage. Nobody moved. Nobody, they just sat there. I have never seen that happen ever before or since. And I waited a little bit. I went back up on stage. I said, all right, folks, you know, this is all we have. We're done. You can go home now.
Wow.
And we literally had to chase people out of there. It was the most spectacular thing I've ever seen. And it just showed the hunger and the yearning to hear about liberty and freedom and empowerment instead of going to these conferences and these bureaucrats standing there all day saying, no, you can't do that. You got to get this license and you got to comply with this. And you got to have a plan for this. You got to have a bathroom for that. You got to have a sink for all this stuff. And it was just profound. And I'll never forget it. It absolutely is one of the high points of my whole career was that reaction on that very one.
Wow. John?
Yeah. So I ended up in this world back when I was in seminary. I was really sick, started to heal myself with food, start getting to know farmers. And the farmers start telling me that when was the National Animal Identification System, Joel? Was that like 2004 to 2007?
Yeah, it was way back there. Yeah.
So
RFID tags on everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I began to look into this, and they literally were trying to make every single farmer like Joel and every single backyard homesteader put RFID tags into all of their animals.
Wow.
So that they could finally answer the question, why did the chicken cross the road? And so I healed myself with food from these people, and these people are telling me that they're under constant threat of just being wiped off the map as producers because of an unending flow of absolutely asinine regulation and government interference. And so I began to get involved in this world. Joel and I, he probably doesn't even remember, some of the first times we ever interacted was trying to get arrested together on the footsteps of the FDA in Silver Springs, Maryland.
Wow.
Where a bunch of us, we took raw milk from Pennsylvania across state lines, which the FDA says you're not allowed to do.
Yep.
And we all drank it and distributed it on the footsteps of the FDA in protest of their stupidity. And basically this war they wage on small farmers and homesteaders and small producers. And Joel and I became friends through just this. So many of our problems in our nation flow out of basically corporations controlling the government, doing the dirty work of eliminating their competitors so that the corporations don't actually have to compete with anybody. And that just burned Joel's and I's britches. And seeing, again, my health was saved through farms like Joel's. And this idea that the government would make it almost impossible and financially unfeasible for farmers to feed people and actually make them healthy. So Joel and I, we were having lunch years later after trying to get arrested. We were having lunch at a conference we were both speaking at. And Joel looks at me and he goes, just once, I want to go to a conference where instead of the speakers being like, this is how you jump through this new hoop, and this is how you jump through that new hoop, how you can walk away from the hoops, how you cannot have to go to this circus anymore.
Yeah.
And I look at Joel and I go, Joel, nobody's going to put on this conference. Who in their right mind? Because all of the major agricultural conferences, who are the sponsors? The sponsors are Farm Bureau and Monsanto and the Indiana Department of Agriculture. And Joel hikes up his suspenders and he goes, we will put on this conference. And I was just so thrilled. Why does Maine have so much food freedom? Why does Wyoming have so much food freedom? Why does South Dakota have so much food freedom? It's not because the politicians wanted to give people their freedom. It's because the people were just like, I've just had enough. I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah.
And you're just going to have to stop me. And eventually, so many people were doing it in Maine, and so many people were doing it in Wyoming, so many people were doing it in Tennessee, that the legislator, they want to take credit for it. But the reality was, they're merely finally recognizing the reality on the ground that people weren't going to play these games anymore. And that's a lot of how I see Rogue, is getting people to realize, if enough of us will not play these stupid games, we will not get these stupid prizes.
Wow. Amazingly said. So I ran the urban farm in Phoenix for 32 years. And for those of you who don't know what that was, it's still the urban farm. I just don't own it anymore. It was 80 feet wide by 160 feet deep. And it was an edible landscape. And there were multiple times that I had to go up against government regulations, especially around gray water and rainwater harvesting. And I just did it anyways. And I enrolled the people in government to show them what was possible. Yeah.
Isn't it crazy though, that in a desert, they're going to make it difficult for you to conserve water.
Right? Yeah.
You know, only the government could take an ocean and turn it into a desert if given enough time.
Yeah. All right, cool. So that's the basic structure of it. And last year's conference, tell me a little bit about that and who spoke at it.
We've had, just to clarify here, the conference that we're having here at Polyface in Virginia is just one of numerous sites that we've had over the years. So we're very committed. We're very committed to moving this thing around the country so people all over the country can get to one once in a while and be encouraged in their own backyard. And so we've had these in Virginia, Kentucky, Florida, Battleground, Washington, Cincinnati, Ohio. We're in the fall, we'll have one in Dallas, Texas. And so we're moving it around because we understand travel is expensive and we want people to be able to be able to come to one. And so I'm not sure we're going to have it. We're going to have it here every year at our farm every year. But the structure changes pretty dramatically from place to place, because obviously we're trying to find people within the region who are practitioners in this space. We have everything from people who are, and John, I think, has a better handle on the history of each individual one, but we've had people who take just a constitutional approach, that there's no, the right of us to be able to engage in contracts without a bureaucrat involved,
mm-hmm.
take a constitutional position. We've had people who start a 501c3 church and under a nonprofit, and you attend my church and you can get this food. We've had people who have started private membership associations, some more successful than others, and food clubs and hybrids and different kinds of things. So we've literally gone out, and John has been really good at this, and finding people who are in this space and basically giving them a platform to explain to the rest of us, here's how I beat the bureaucrats. And man, are those fun stories. They're just fantastic stories of empowerment and encouragement. And John, you can flesh that out a little more. We do have people who have become true friends of the movement, who we have more routinely than others. And then there are people that are less, whatever, less profound than what they do. But all of it is about discovering. Our motto, our moniker is circumvention, not compliance.
Mm. So
the point is that there is a time when compliance becomes so expensive and so difficult that you actually circumvent. This is what started the homeschool movement. People were fed up with the public schools, and they were trying to change the teachers and change the curriculum. And finally, it was just too difficult. So you know what? Let's just circumvent it. We'll just do homeschooling. And that's happened in numerous things throughout history, where eventually you just throw up your hands and say, forget the system. Let's just create a different system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then hold on before you jump in here, John. So really what we have here is you've created a food freedom conference, really.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. I'll tell you what, it takes a lot of energy to circumvent the system. So sharing people's stories about that's epic. You were going to say, John?
Yeah, our speakers, they vary from event to event. And I'm always looking for new innovative takes that people are trialing. It's like, how did I end up founding a buying club? I healed myself with food,
Yeah.
but I also had a background in business and economics. That was my undergraduate degree, business, finance, math, economics. And I realized there's no way to do food as a small player. Louisville, the city we live outside of, over the last 20 years, every small local food player who's ever tried to come into being no longer exists because you just cannot play by the rules and make a fair. So I was sitting here and I was like, I want to help people get real food from local farmers because I want them to be healthy. But I can't do it with any of the tools and systems that I currently see, especially in the regulatory structure. I was like, what if I just don't play? And so I began to look at where are the cracks in the pavement where I can plant my acorn. I only got so many acorns, but there has to be some crack in this regulatory concrete. And I was like, oh, if you don't sell things, it's this language of sales. My buying club isn't going to sell anything to anyone. We don't sell stuff. We merely help you get things. I don't sell them to you. I'm merely a service provider. I don't sell things. And even when we were raided by the Kentucky State Health Department and
What?
served cease and desist and quarantine orders, we ended up winning because lo and behold, this was a workable crack in the regulatory
Oh.
paper.
So if I could just jump in to make sure that the people listening understand the what we're dealing with. When John said the operative term is it has to stay out of commerce. So where the government regulates is stuff that's in commerce. There are some very specific definitions of what in commerce means, or let's just say in a vernacular, a sale. What is a sale? And one of the things that is not a sale is if the buyer shares risk with the seller, then it's an investment and the transaction is a dividend, not a sale. So in other words, when I buy stocks and bonds, that's not a sale, that's an investment. I'm not guaranteed anything. Okay. And so if you can craft a food transaction that is not a sale, then the government has no jurisdiction over it.
Wow.
And so this is the kind of stuff that we're dealing with. Our farm, they came in and they confiscated our whole year's beef supply and accused us of selling meat through a custom slaughterhouse. So we had all of our customers' names on the live animals when we in. Jane Doe owns ear tag number 5, and John Smith owns ear tag number 6. They all went to the abattoir, but the government said, oh no, the fact that those people bought those animals live doesn't matter because they're going to get it in packages. And so we fought that and we won. But this is the kind of thing that we're dealing with here to help folks understand there are ways to conduct transactions outside the jurisdiction of the bureaucracy. And that's exactly what John's describing here. And he's one of the most successful people in the country that has been able to find, as he says, the crack in the concrete. It's wonderful.
I decided to do it through this particular structure of a buying club. Niti Bali is doing it through using the protections of a church. So she has a book on food churches. We had her speak a few times. One lady out in Washington or Oregon, she is butchering under the protections of an educational association where you can come to an educational event and pay a fee for the education, but walk away with the meat because it's educational.
So yes, yeah,
And
so you're paying for the education, and the meat is just comes with the territory. So you're not actually buying meat.
yeah.
So you're no longer buying meat. And So what I've loved about the conference is I'm not just highlighting farmers, but I want to highlight the entire food chain. What are successful workarounds farmers can use? What are successful workarounds food distributors can use? What are successful workarounds butchers can use? What are successful workarounds chefs can use? I'm still on the hunt for an underground chef. I've always wanted, because I know they're out there, people. Because have you ever looked at the margins in the restaurant industry? The restaurant industry is absolutely punishing disaster. And I know there's people running around who they basically run restaurants in people's home. And they'll chef and they'll avoid all of that regulation and all of that overhead. And they're able to make a good living doing something they love. Mm-hmm. And people absolutely love what they do. And they're able to do that because they've gotten the government out of being in between them and the people. And so we're just always looking all over the place for anyone who's seeking to innovate around so they can do something they love and serve their community with it.
Yeah, we've had people, for example, Greg, that are going the pet food route. That's another one that's a real hot one right now, where you're selling material not for human consumption. And it's a wink, wink, as long as it's consistent and you're consistent and you don't play games. This is the thing. You can't play games with this. You can't tell a customer, oh, of course you can eat it. This is just, you can't say that. Yeah. So we're giving people the nuances to stay out of trouble and actually pull this off, to actually do it without raising red flags, without getting people going. There's a guy, we featured one guy in, where was he, John? In Oregon or Washington, where he sells a live animal. He has a contract where you buy the live animal and you get the meat and he keeps the guts. You can slaughter your own animal, okay? So he said, I'm slaughtering my own animal and for myself, and she just gets the meat and I want the guts and the hide. And it's very clever. And what's exciting now that we've been doing this for 4 years is there are people that are taking all of these ideas, hybridizing them, and are coming up with even what better or workarounds than we could have conceived when we first started. So this thing is just growing on the creativity of people. And it's just gratifying and exciting to see.
Gotta love it. You're planting seeds for people to change the culture.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's our real, like, my goal with Rogue is I'll know I've succeeded with this conference if by the time I'm 60-ish years old, it's completely unnecessary.
Yeah. Mm.
Because at the end of the day, the government should not be able to tell me who I get food from. If I want to buy a chicken pot pie from my next door neighbor, there is no sane reason why I should not have to do that and why she should need a $500,000 facility. If I want to buy a beef from somebody and have them butcher the beef, we should be able to do these things. And the crazy thing is that the really hard part to get people to realize is up until 60 years ago, mm-hmm. all of these things that are now treated as dangerous and crazy, that just wasn't normal.
That's the way it happened.
That's the only way you could survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what we've got here is a government intrusion in one of the most intimate decisions we get to make, which is the fuel for our own microbiome. If that isn't expressive of my individual sovereignty, I don't know what is. And so the pushback is always from folks who say, but maybe they're dirty farmers. There might be unsafe food. What if somebody gets sick from, okay, that's true. As if nobody's getting sick from government sanctioned food right now. And
or chemicals in food.
Or chemicals in food, absolutely. And so the government authorizes tons of harmful additives and harmful practices and all sorts of things that smaller operators and people selling in their neighborhoods and communities where there is openness and transparency, and I don't have sheep dip to walk through, hazmat material, and a guard fence to go through, where the butcher, baker, and the candlestick maker are embedded within the patron community that keeps them in business, we need to be able to have a parallel universe, an alternative. How a culture treats its lunatic fringe who says, as a consenting adult, I'd like to exercise freedom of choice on my food. Thank you very much.
Yep.
That is now the lunatic fringe in our country. But and how a culture deals with this lunatic fringe determines whether it's a tyranny or a freedom-based culture.
And it's crazy you bring up like the chemicals in food. There was a discussion on Twitter last week that some friends tagged me in, and it was some conservative talk show host. And this conservative host is asking this question on Twitter, and she goes, isn't it peculiar that modern animal butchering operations have no windows?
Yeah.
Because this person was waking up to the fact, like, because
interesting.
Why do they have no windows? Because they don't want anyone to see what's actually going on in the food system.
Yeah.
Joel and I, we want you to see everything. If you want to get food from my farm, come butcher chickens with me. Come stick your hands in my worm compost. That's the kind of food economy we're advocating, one where you don't need the government because you have complete transparency between producer and consumer. We're the ones actually pushing for transparent, safe food. And the people who decry us at times are the ones building concrete buildings with no windows and just and telling you, just trust us, just trust us.
If in the spring of 2020, if the U.S., instead of being supplied by about 300 mega processing facilities and all the food coming through those 300 funnels, if instead it had been supplied by 300,000
backyard farmers,
smaller outfits, would we have had as big a hiccup in the food system as we have? And it's a rhetorical question. The obvious answer is, of course, we wouldn't have. We would have had a lot broader base, more diversity within the system, more security, stability, and safety throughout the system.
Yeah. So the Rogue Conference is coming up May 17th and 18th of 2024. And tell us about the venue, would you, Joel?
The venue will be here at Polyface Farm, which is in Virginia Shenandoah Valley, just outside of Stanton, and we'll be supplying everybody with food. It is not a hotel. It's not a conference center. It's out on the land. Your kids can fish in the pond. It's very family friendly. And we have a Lunatic Learning Center where we'll meet. It can seat about 400 people.
Wow.
It's a three-tier pavilion theater. I'm a lunatic farmer, so this is the Lunatic Learning Center. And that's the venue. So it's a wonderful farm, bucolic, pastoral landscape that's very family friendly, child friendly. And we'd love to have you come and see it.
Wait, you built a 400 seat auditorium at your farm?
Yes. Yes. We did this.
Wow. Yeah.
And you know what? We didn't ask the county for a permit. We didn't ask permission. We didn't do anything. It's the Lunatic Learning Center. And we did it as a result of 2020. In 2020, conferences were being canceled all over the place. And the Weston A. Price Foundation had their conference canceled. And in desperation, they called us and said, could we just come down and do something there? We want to get together. I said, sure, come on. So we hadn't brought the chickens in yet. So we put some bales of hay in the hoop house. And we had, 300 people there. They sold out in about 48 hours. And this was in the fall of 2020. And people came, they hugged, they laughed. We didn't require masks, no jab requirements or anything. And at the end of that, I said, I wonder how many other organizations are wanting to get together. But we don't know how long this is going to go. It's a 2-week thing. And then it's another 2 weeks. And now we're into 7 months and we're still locked down, can't do anything. And so we, in 2021, we opened the farm up for gatherings, had a great response. And in that next winter, then, we realized this is something that our culture needs. They need a place where people can come and get together. And so we built the Lunatic Learning Center that winter. And it's been just wonderful. It's dramatic.
Wow. Congratulations.
It's a fantastic venue. The first time I walked into it, when I went to Greece, and you walk into the amphitheaters, it has that kind of just perfectly fitting for the land and place, and a tremendous place to get together with like-minded people.
Awesome. And who are some of the speakers that you have this year?
Yeah. So this year, we'll have Catherine Austin Fitz, who founded an organization called Solari. She has an incredible story of fighting and beating the government. So I'll let her tell her own story. But she's a real special lady who's accomplished a great deal. This year, Joel and I decided the main theme of this Rogue is what we call the Great PMA Debate. So PMA stands for Private Member Association. And private member associations are something that fall under the constitutional framework. And we've had some speakers who've used them really successfully, not just in farming, but I know some people who do PMAs for healthcare and all sorts of other stuff. And they've been fairly successful, it seems. And then we've had a few other people who've ran into some problems with PMA. And Joel and I are two of these rare people who are curious and believe in open discussion and debate.
Yeah.
So why don't we get a bunch of people who disagree about PMAs together, mm-hmm, and let them debate each other on this issue, and let's ask both of them questions, and let's give the audience not the stupid bobble-headed talking heads screaming at each other nonsense you now see, but a real good old-fashioned, these are the questions, these are the issues. So we're going to have Morgan Phelps and Carla of Pro Advocate. Pro Advocate is the largest, I believe, PMA legal provider in the country. Then we're going to have the PMA Manifesto people on the con side. Michael Kilpatrick, who runs an incredibly successful farm operation in Ohio.
Yep.
He's going to be speaking. Yeah, you probably know Michael.
Oh, yes.
And then we have a number of other speakers still in the mix. So Congressman Thomas Massey, hopefully State Senator Craig Hickman from Maine is going to be coming down to join us and talking about how Maine went from food sovereignty, township by township and city by city, did they do a constitutional amendment, Joel, in Maine?
Yeah. It's a statewide food sovereignty act. Wow. He actually was the author and the prime mover of it. And yeah, he's a real force. I call him a force of nature.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. All right. So where can people get tickets and how do we come?
Yeah. The tickets are available at the Rogue Food Conference website, which is roguefoodconference.com.
Cool. Joel?
Yeah, come on. We'd love to have you. One of our other speakers this time is going to be Tracy, who is working with the Amos Miller case in Pennsylvania. Many of people have heard of the Amish farmer Amos Miller, who's been raided by the government and shut down and police taped and all sorts of things. And so she'll be bringing us up to speed on some of that. I just can't tell you, in a time where many of us feel like the federal government is out of control and intervening in all sorts of things in our lives, I'm reminded that prior to the Civil War, the federal government was kind of a non-event. People just didn't think about the federal government. It was very much state government, local government. There was a lot of diversity, a lot of differences. But the federal was just really small and kind of not that big a deal. But after the Civil War, the federal government really grew. And today, there's hardly an hour of your life that something the federal government is doing doesn't affect or intervene or somehow manipulate you in your life. Your decisions, your freedoms, your policies, your protocols is dictated by the government, by the federal government. And so when you come to one of these Rogue Food conferences to just fellowship with people who don't look to the federal government to solve everything and who actually believe a lot of our problems are caused by the federal government, let's disentangle and build a parallel alternative, is just, it's lonely out here. Even conservatives will say, We just can't let people make their food decisions. There might be a dirty farmer. So the number of people who get this issue, who understand this issue, and understand the slippery slope of pushing every morsel of food through a bureaucratic stamp of approval, the people who understand that's not good for us is extremely small. And so it's a lonely world out here. And yeah. To then get together with other folks who haven't bowed to Baal yet, Old Testament terminology, is really an empowering thing and will carry you on very well. And a lot of sharing of ideas. We're all creative, we're thinking, we're actually trying to think of how the best way is to move through this. And it's just a time of real refreshment in this movement.
Nice. Thank you, Joel. Any final thoughts, John?
You know, as Joel said, one of the things I love about the event is it attracts not just people interested in food, but doctors and naturopaths and chiropractors and backyard homesteaders. Because the ideas we're talking about, Joel and I really wanted to make a difference in food and farming, but we have people who want to make a difference in healthcare. And where do you go to talk about alternative healthcare models? Just so many different areas where we're stymied from helping one another. People are really, how do I deliver affordable healthcare that's truly efficacious? I was at a physiotherapist's office last week for an injury I'm trying to get over. And I asked him, how did you end up starting your own office? And he goes, I was seeing 40 patients a day and miserable the entire time doing it because I couldn't care for people.
Yeah.
And I found somebody who showed me a model I could use where I could actually help people. And that's really at the heart of Rogue. Joel and I want to actually help individual people and their communities build resilient solutions to the problems we now face as a country.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you. So the conference is the Rogue Food Conference. You can find out about it at roguefoodconference.com. It is May 17 and 18, 2024, coming up. Thank you both for joining me today.
And appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having us.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.